This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey, 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 the good guys have won one at last. We're going to talk about it. It is Thursday, July 6, 2023, and it's Polglizer sitting in for Jimmy Failla, taking your calls at 888-788-9910. We had a big one. Another big show today. Former Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich is going to join us later this hour. Then in hour two, we'll have Dr. Michael Burgess. He's the congressman from North Texas, not far from where I am right now, representing Texas's 26th congressional district. Then in hour three, we have New York Post columnist Miranda Devine, who in 2020 was at the epicenter of the story we're going to lead off with today. So I am in the current events business. I do talk shows like this. I own successful news and talk radio station and Fox Across America affiliate KTBB in Tyler, Longview, Texas. Hey, I stay current. I know what's going on, or at least I thought I did. But I was caught completely flat-footed and unaware yesterday morning when news of a court ruling in the Federal District Court for the Western District of Louisiana dropped. The judge, his name is Terry Doty, he's a Trump appointee, issued a 155-page injunction on the 4th of July in the case of Missouri v. Biden. The case was brought by the Attorneys General of Louisiana and Missouri and is being argued in Federal District Court in Louisiana. The issue is the Biden administration's skirting of the free speech clause of the First Amendment to the Constitution. They're doing that by pressuring social media companies like Twitter and Facebook to take down and suppress posts with which the administration disagrees. Now, this is a really, really big deal. This injunction, which stops the administration from doing what they're doing while the case is being decided, it's a brushback pitch up and in on the administration, as well as future administrations. Senator Eric Schmidt, who was the attorney general in Missouri at the time this lawsuit was filed, he's one of its authors, was on Hannity last night, and he said this, cut five.
It's a massive win for free speech and a devastating loss for censorship. And when I was attorney general, as you mentioned, we filed this lawsuit about a year ago. And what's been uncovered ever since, Jason, has been a vast censorship enterprise. I mean, this was big government colluding and coercing big tech and these social media giants to censor speech. And of course, the government can't do it, but they can't outsource that either, and they can't force and coerce these companies to do the same. And what's been uncovered in 20,000+ documents, emails, direct messages from senior officials in the administration with high-ranking executives of these social media giants is shocking.
Yes, it is. And under the First Amendment, the government cannot suppress your speech. But because Facebook and Twitter command such a huge proportion of the national discussion forum, the administration and agencies within the administration have done the next best thing to telling you what you can or cannot say. They've done it through Facebook and Twitter. They've said to Facebook and Twitter, go suppress speech for us, the government. And Facebook and Twitter, being led by reliable leftists at the time, before Elon Musk bought Twitter, they did what they were asked to do. They complied. But Facebook is still led by the execrable Mark Zuckerberg. No Elon Musk buyout reform of Facebook. And he just launched this week a new app called Threads. It's intended to be a Twitter killer. It signed up 10 million users in its first minutes of existence. It's supposedly almost identical on the interface to Twitter. So social media, once hailed as the forum where we're going to have unlimited exchange of ideas, a free marketplace for discourse, was transformed during the pandemic, particularly into a de facto federal ministry of truth. There can be no such thing as a government ministry of truth in a free democratic republic. There is no one person or institution into which we may assign the ultimate authority to determine what is true and what isn't. Since humans have been able to talk, there has been debate as to what constitutes truth.
Tastes great.
Did you hear that?
It's less filling.
Pretty strong words.
It tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great. Tastes great. Tastes great.
This is what we do. We argue. We debate. This is how the truth emerges. We argue with each other, and we argue our corner, and that's how we keep a free republic free. The pandemic unleashed the very worst totalitarian instincts of the liberal ruling class, the fear of what was being characterized as an all-new, never-before-seen virus, which turned out not to be so true. Coronaviruses have been around for a long time. But the fear of that virus set the stage for government at every level, from the federal government all the way down to your local government, to assume control over your free exercise of your free civil liberties in ways that were, prior to the pandemic, simply unimaginable in America. Small businesses were ordered to close. Your local church, where you go to church, you're told you couldn't attend services. Local officials, acting without any action from an elected legislative body, which is to say you didn't get a vote, decided which businesses were essential and which were not. Non-essential businesses were ordered to close. Many of them failed. Kids were kept out of school. Livelihoods were lost. Visits to the doctor were prohibited in all but emergency cases. That means that health screenings intended to save lives did not happen. Clinical depression began to rise. So did suicides, drug abuse, domestic abuse. It was all awful. Freedom of movement and basic liberties were curtailed in ways that no one thought possible. The government's response to the COVID-19 pandemic exceeded by anything we had ever seen. The response of government to prior pandemics, even the influenza pandemic, the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. What happened in America and around the world, but what happened in America particularly, had never happened before. And some voices of reason spoke out about the government's response. Dr. Scott Atlas at Stanford University, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya at Harvard were two of them. They argued that the lockdowns went too far. They presented credible evidence and data to support their positions. They led a group of like-minded doctors and scientists to issue what would come to be called the Great Barrington Declaration, which called for ending lockdowns and instead concentrating pandemic efforts on those who were known by then to be at the greatest risk for hospitalization, severe illness, or death. And rather than engage in debate about that in an attempt to ferret out the truth and arrive at the best policy, instead of debating them, they were silenced. And that is not the hallmark of a free society. It's the hallmark of a totalitarian state. Government officials were in daily contact with Facebook and Twitter and were actively policing what was being posted about the pandemic on those platforms. And anything that disagreed with the establishment's line, the health establishment inside them, the Trump administration, which was tyrannical, anything that disagreed was characterized as misinformation. It wasn't another point of view. It wasn't something else to consider. It was simply called misinformation, labeled as dangerous, and taken down. Government was doing by proxy what it cannot under the Constitution do directly. It was suppressing free speech. With the success of that, with the success during the pandemic of suppressing the speech of people who wanted to dissent against official government policy on COVID, with that in hand, the mechanisms were in place for getting social media to do the government's bidding when the election rolled around. And Hunter Biden's laptop became a story that had the potential to affect that outcome. It was no trouble by then for the FBI to lean on Twitter to suspend the account of the New York Post, America's oldest newspaper and the outlet that broke the story. We're going to talk about that later in the show with Miranda Devine. But here's what Kayleigh McEnany, Trump's White House secretary at the time, had to say on Fox and Friends yesterday about that. It's Cut 7.
The judge wrote this: the Hunter Biden laptop story was censored on these platforms. And but basically what they did was Twitter blocked users from sharing links to the New York Post story and prevented users who had previously sent tweets sharing the Hunter Biden story from sending new tweets until they deleted the previous tweet. Fact check, true. I was White House press secretary at the time. I shared the article. I was blocked from Twitter, and my account was put back up only after I deleted the tweet.
See? I mean, how? She's the White House press secretary, and her account was deleted. Unbelievable. Polls taken since, by the way, have revealed that had that story not been suppressed by the FBI with the cooperation of Twitter, the outcome of the 2020 election would most likely have been entirely different. The Hunter Biden laptop story, if it had been allowed to proliferate and make its way through the electorate, it likely would have changed how the election came out. Two attorneys general, God bless them, Louisiana and Missouri, had the fortitude to file suit on this issue, and while that suit is pending, the court has enjoined the Biden administration from continuing its practice of working directly with social media to silence your free speech. I hate reading aloud from documents, but I have to. Here's a couple of passages from Judge Terry Doty's 155-page injunction ruling. He says, quote, "The present case arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in United States history. In their attempts to suppress alleged disinformation, the federal government, and particularly the defendants named here," and that's a long list of Biden administration officials, "are alleged to have blatantly ignored the First Amendment's right to free speech. The plaintiffs are likely to succeed on the merits in establishing that the government has used its power to silence the opposition. Opposition to COVID-19, masking and lockdowns, opposition to the lab leak theory of COVID-19, opposition to the validity of the 2020 election, opposition to President Biden's policies, statements that the Hunter Biden laptop story was true, and opposition to policies of the government officials in power, all were suppressed. It is quite telling that each example or category of suppressed speech was conservative in nature. This targeted suppression of conservative ideas is a perfect example of viewpoint discrimination in political speech. American citizens have the right to engage in free debate about the significant issues affecting the country. During the COVID-19 pandemic, a period that best characterized by widespread doubt and uncertainty, the United States government seems to have assumed a role similar to the Orwellian Ministry of Truth." Well, as I say, God bless, the good guys win one. It's a big one. There's reason to celebrate, reason to be optimistic that the good guys will go on to win this lawsuit. What do you think? 888-788-9910. I particularly want to know if during all of this, going all the way back to the beginning of the pandemic through the 2020 election up to now, have your social media posts been censored, suppressed, taken down, throttled? Has there been an attempt to silence what you had to say on these important topics? Have you experienced what Kayleigh McEnany experienced and what Miranda Devine at the New York Post experienced? What's your experience with being suppressed by social media? Has this affected you? 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. The show gets cracking with you next. Stay with us.
He's the host you shouldn't get too close to.
"A lot of things about me you don't know anything about, Daddy. Things you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand."
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
So big news yesterday, the federal district court in Louisiana clipped the Biden administration's wings with respect to colluding with social media companies to suppress your free speech. Your thoughts on that, and have you had that happen? 888-788-9910. We lead off with Gus in Tyler. Gus, you're the leadoff hitter. What do you have to say?
Well, somehow or another, they've created an implausible deniability. There's people who really don't believe this, but we all know that it's happened. It's been proven. It's been released. And they're not just violating our freedom of speech, but they're preventing us from hearing what we choose to listen to, and they're not allowing us to hear everything. They're picking and choosing. And to me, all of this is just, that keeps us from having freedom of thought and freedom of thinking and belief and so forth. I mean, it's not just unconstitutional, Paul. It's ungodly.
Well, let me tell you what, if you believe something, you know, if you're the Biden administration or if you're the Trump administration or the Obama, if you're whoever you are, if you're an individual, an ordinary citizen, if you believe something, argue your case. Make your case. And if somebody disagrees with you, let them make their case. That's how it's supposed to work. It's robust, vigorous debate. That's what makes a constitutional republic. Instead, what the administration wanted to do, and this was going on during the Trump administration, the permanent federal bureaucracy was doing what it had to do in order to suppress speech it didn't want to hear, rather than debate, just silence the other side. And that's not how it's supposed to work. You know, it was worth debating the lockdowns. That should have been debated vigorously before you run around, you know, depriving people of their livelihoods and making it where people can't go to church and have funerals when Nana dies and go get a haircut and go for routine doctor visits that aren't emergencies. That should have been debated. We should have had a long, vigorous debate before shutting down the economy. But anybody that tried to debate it was silenced. And anybody who tried to say, well, maybe this Hunter Biden laptop story is real, was silenced. Are you on social media, Gus?
I get on Facebook sometimes. I don't use any of the others. Wait a minute. I've got a Twitter account I never use, and I've got a Truth Social account that I check maybe once or twice a month. I used to be active on it, but this has been going on, Paul, has a lot of reason why I've tapered off. And you know where I get my news now? I get it off the radio, and then I just pray that I can go home and look it up.
Well, good for you. And listen, I think you're getting it off of a very good radio station. It happens to be there where you are, KTBB, Tyler Longview, and I thank you for that.
So the other problem that I have is this judge has put out this order for them to cease and desist.
Okay. Yeah.
One thing, I don't think they're going to cease and desist. And secondly, I don't think it matters. They've already groomed these companies to do what they're doing, and I don't think they're going to quit.
Well, there's that fear. I think, I'll take Elon Musk at his word and the evidence that we've seen with respect to Twitter that they have stopped the egregious activities that were going on prior to Elon Musk buying the company. I don't trust Facebook as far as I can throw a building. And Facebook has just launched what they hope will be a Twitter killer called Threads. And it is intended to take the place of Twitter. If you already have an Instagram account, all of your social circle via Instagram instantly transfers to Threads. Threads has had enormous uptake in its first day, and I have that fear, Gus, that you have, that even though the court has issued an injunction, and the injunction just says you have to stop doing this until the case can be decided, even though the court has issued an injunction, I think, you know, certainly Zuckerberg's company will continue to suppress anything with which it disagrees. And you've got to believe they'll find some way to wire around the injunction and back channel it and all those kinds of things. Meanwhile, they just can't do it out in the open anymore the way they were doing it. Hey, Gus, appreciate the call. More of Fox Across America. Paul, glad you're sitting in for Jimmy Failla. It's coming up after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla and inviting you to follow me in my weekly column, YouTellMeTexas.com. And if you happen to be in East Texas, listen to the radio stations that I own, most notably of which is this Fox Across America affiliate, KTBB, Tyler Longview. In any event, Want to hear from you right now, 888-788-9910. Let's head to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It's Rudy up next on Fox Across America. Hello, Rudy.
Hey, how you doing, Paul? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Hey, the issue of free speech is something that I tell you, it just gets me, because the First Amendment gives you the freedom of speech. And what the left doesn't understand, it doesn't give you freedom from speech. And because they are completely out in left field, and everybody with a logical mind understands that they are idiots when it comes to some of their policies and their ideas, and some of the stuff that they spout, anybody with a brain realizes that it's not. So they have to suppress all of the things that somebody might go, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, this is ridiculous. Of course it's not right. And basically what they're doing, and the ironic thing is that they're calling what other people are saying misinformation, when they know themselves what they are saying is the misinformation. But because they're calling it out, they feel if they call it out first, you know, the first person to cry racist, the first person to do whatever, they're the one that people listen to. So the ironic thing, as I said, is that, you know, they're doing the thing, and then they're and I mentioned this again, it's my wife's a Democrat, and anytime she sees a flaw in herself or I point out a flaw in herself, before I can get there and she knows what she's doing, she will use transference and put that on me and say that I'm the one that's doing it. So, you know, the messed up thing is it's exactly what they're doing. It's like, hey, you're destroying the country. Meanwhile, they know that that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, either that or they are.
They're right, you know.
Well, either that or they are so ideologically hidebound, they actually believe what they're saying. It makes no matter wrong is wrong. And I'll tell you what it's been in my experience, Rudy, in terms of having debates, discussions, or arguments with people. I have found that the minute I am unable to get a word in, when the other side is making sure that I don't talk, when they cut me off in mid-sentence, when I can't say what I want to say, I have found every time it's because the other side was losing the debate.
Oh, yeah.
And as a consequence of losing the debate, they do what they can to shut me down. And that's exactly the White House, the administration, didn't want to engage in constructive debate about the COVID lockdowns. And I say the White House, it was the Trump White House, but it was an infrastructure inside the Trump White House that really was working against Donald Trump. You got to read Scott Atlas's book, mm-hmm. and you'll understand mm-hmm. that it was the government inside a Republican administration working against the administration, and they didn't want to debate. They didn't want to have a vigorous debate on the wisdom of lockdowns or the wisdom of masking or and then subsequently in the Biden administration, whether you should or have to take a vaccine or do it because you thought it was in your best interest based on a discussion with your doctor. Those things should have been vigorously debated, and they weren't. And instead, the attempt was made for all debate to be silenced, and that's not how you run a democratic republic. Hey, Rudy, appreciate your call. I'm going to get one more. Go ahead. Okay, Rudy, well, hey, appreciate you, man. We'll try to get one more in here real quick before we have to take a break. Kevin, Hampton Roads, Virginia, what do you say?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. Well, I've been censored a few times by Facebook, and not only that, I could shock you with a story. I don't think we're going to have time about being surveillanced and my emails being monitored. But I'm a political activist, so one of the times I posted at Facebook after the Washington Post came out and said Trump was going to lose Wisconsin by 17 points about 3 weeks before the 2020 election. I posted that and then made a comparison to Joseph Goebbels' statement, repeat a colossal lie often enough and people will believe it. Facebook took it down, said I was a danger to the community, and suspended services I don't even use for like 30 days on that one. On the other point regarding my emails, I send out emails to about 200 news organizations in 11 states, and one day after doing that, I come back in my room, and it says my AOL account's been flagged for suspicious service, and then it says I need to call a phone number. I call it up, and the guy who answers with a Middle Eastern accent says, we want to know who you're emailing and why. And I said, none of your business. What is this, communist China? And he said he was going to put me on a list and let me do it and wanted my phone number. So I'm kind of rushing the story a little bit, but I've had things like that happen in the last several years as a political activist that supports Trump.
Well, and the thing is, you know, you're allowed to support Trump. You're allowed to support Biden. You're allowed to support your next door neighbor's Scottish Terrier for president if you want to. It's a free market for ideas and a free exchange of ideas, and you should be able to debate and say what you think. You can't go on Twitter or Facebook and advocate for killing people. You can't. There's certain things that are out of bounds, but just disagreeing is not out of bounds, and that's where you run into trouble with respect to suppressing free speech. The entire country is founded on the idea that it is not only okay to disagree, it is actually civically necessary. We need need to be able to argue through ideas. Hey, Kevin, appreciate the call. 888-788-9910. We have Mark Brnovich coming up after the break. Hope you'll stick around here on Fox Across America.
A show that's taking orders from the big man upstairs.
We're on a mission from God.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It's Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla and taking your calls at 888-788-9910. But right now on the line with us, we have former Attorney General from the great state of Arizona, Mark Brnovich. Mark, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having me on, Paul. Good.
So listen, you've been an AG. We've had two AGs, the now current Senator Schmidt in Missouri, and the AG from Louisiana filed Missouri v. Biden. You've, as an Attorney General, filed suit against an administration. How's this going to go?
Well, I enjoy the fact that I think I sued President Biden more than anyone else during my time as AG. And unfortunately, Paul, it was because you had a lawless administration. And we saw that, whether it was me having to sue him on just trying to get him to enforce existing laws when it came to the Border Patrol or controlling our border, when I sued him over the unconstitutional COVID vaccine. You know, and of course, my, you know, colleagues, Jeff Landry in Louisiana, are continuing to work with this lawsuit, the latest lawsuit, related to what the Biden administration was doing, where they were essentially working with social media companies, with big tech companies, and suppressing speech as it related to the COVID-19 and what was going on with the vaccines and fighting it.
So the order says that they can't call, text, email, contact social media companies for the purpose of taking posts down or suppressing the free exercise of speech. It says you can't do all of that. That's what the order says, the injunction says. The administration last night, the Department of Justice on behalf of the administration filed an notice of appeal. They're going to file an interlocutory appeal in the hopes that they can get this to go away. That tells me that they think being able to work through the social media companies to silence their critics is important to them, correct?
Well, you know, Paul, that we saw this a few months back when I was still AG. Well, remember they wanted to have like a Department of Misinformation or whatever it was,
yes,
where they were going to,
yes,
when it came to issues related to the border and the cartels, they were going to basically have a minister of propaganda. Well, this is just more of an attempt, and we see this in communist countries, but with the far left, by the radical neo-Marxists, to suppress any speech which disagrees with their narrative. And let's all be honest with ourselves. What we saw during the COVID lockdowns, and it's one of the reasons why I opposed the lockdowns, it's one of the reasons why I wrote an opinion saying that it's a violation of the First Amendment to close churches, why I sued Joe Biden over unconstitutional vaccine mandates, because it was a massive power grab by the federal government in an attempt to get not only power to the federal government, but to make people dependent on the federal government for everything, for their safety, for their comfort, for their livelihood. And that's what we're seeing by the left. And this is all part of that. And so what the administration was doing, and if you read, you know, the discovery and you see what happens, there was a holistic and systematic attempt by numerous people in the administration to suppress any speech and stop any speech or comments or post that disagreed with their narrative. And so clearly, the judge found that that was a violation of the First Amendment. And I tell folks all the time, in many ways, this is more dangerous and more insidious than what happens even in communist countries. Because I will tell you what, I'm a first-generation American. My family lived through communism. And people that have lived in communist countries, they generally know when the dictator or leader says this, that, or the other thing. They know it's crap. They know it's BS, right? It's the old joke that we pretend to work and they pretend to pay us. So everyone kind of has a healthy distrust for government authority, but they're afraid to do anything. In this instance, where you have the heavy hand of government basically using the private sector and manipulating and forcing the private sector to do certain things, in many ways it's much more dangerous because a lot of people, if they're getting their media or they're getting their information on social media, they're seeing this and they don't realize that the government's manipulating them. And I kept trying to tell people, Paul, when all this was going on, I kept trying to remind people that to me it is the height of hypocrisy, and it's absolutely amazing that the Biden administration refuses to answer basic questions from the media about Hunter Biden or Ukraine, and yet they feel that they can be such a crusader to combat quote-unquote misinformation by suppressing free speech on the Internet.
Former Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich is with us here on Fox Across America. So, okay, Mark, is all of this telling us that the two big social media companies, which is Meta, Facebook, Instagram, and now this new thing called Threads, and Twitter, are too big for the good health of the republic?
Look, before I left being attorney general, we had some open investigations into the tech companies under various theories, including some antitrust theories. And I am actually very proud of the fact, before I left being AG, we had a lawsuit against Google using our consumer protection laws, and we reached a record settlement with them regarding the information they were collecting and how that was being used. And so, you know, here's the big thing I remind folks all the time is that, you know, companies like Google are making billions and tens of billions of dollars every year, and you, the user, are the commodity. They basically collect information about you, they buy, sell it, and they can manipulate you. They can manipulate you with news feeds and what you see, when you see it. And I tell people all the time, when it comes to big tech, they know more about where you're going, who you're with, and what your medical conditions are than your kids, spouse, and doctor combined. I mean, because, you know, your phone tracks you. I mean, it measures barometric pressure, altitude, all that stuff. So, I mean, you know, the tech companies have made it very, very hard to opt out, not be manipulated. And just to put this in context, when, you know, we broke up Standard Oil, when, you know, the era of the trust busters and when, you know, the companies that were so big they were a threat to democracy, you know, had to be broken up. I mean, Standard Oil, the Rockefellers, they controlled less market share than Google does now when it comes to search engines. So
absolutely
people can draw their
true
own conclusions, but, you know, we're talking, you know, if we busted up the oil company, Standard Oil, because it was too big and a threat to democracy, well, look at what's happening with tech and information right now.
Okay, so what's the administration going to do? First of all, and I've had callers previously on this show and a show I hosted earlier today on another outlet. They said, well, you know, it doesn't make a difference what the order says. The administration is going to find a way around it. Is that likely?
You know, I would like to say that I'm a subjective optimist and an objective pessimist. And the reality is we saw this even in a lot of our immigration lawsuits, and we saw a little hint of this now even with the college, you know, bailout, that where the Biden administration does not like an opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court or from a federal court. And then what they essentially do is attack the judiciary, undermine the judiciary and the credibility of that branch of government, and then they find a way to basically disregard it. And if you recall, they've done this in numerous instances. And I think it's completely inappropriate. And I'm hoping at some point, you know, remember, federal judges have lifetime appointments. So at some point, I'm hoping some federal judge somewhere starts holding Biden administration officials in contempt, because clearly we're on this path now where when it comes to the judicial system, you know, what if you're Hunter Biden or you're the Biden administration, there's one set of rules for you and one set of rules for everybody else. And that truly is dangerous to a Republican form of government. And I think a lot of times judges are reluctant to, like, hold the executive branch accountable because they worry about the precedent and the separation of powers. But at some point, some judge somewhere is going to say, you know, whether it's on immigration, you know, whether it's on another one of these, the housing program where they had those issues during the COVID funds, at some point, some federal judge is going to say, no, you can't do that. Bring your toothbrush because I'm putting you in jail for contempt of court.
You understand that, but if you file, if a judge issues a contempt order, it's up to the DOJ to prosecute it, is it not?
Yeah, but sometimes there have been instances where you can sometimes, they'll appoint like a special master or, you know, the court itself can appoint someone to, you know, do that. So I think there's ways or there could be ways around that. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, we are in many ways in unprecedented waters. And that's why I think as a principled rule of law conservative, I remind folks all the time, we have to always be right because, look, here's the reality. Tech companies, social media, the internet is controlled by the left. The universities, the higher education establishment, which I have sued multiple times, is controlled by the left and the far left. And, you know, quite frankly, mainstream media, most radio and television today, is controlled by the left as well. And so they're when you are a principled rule of law conservative, you know, the left will do everything to attack you because they want to undermine your credibility. And then sometimes there's even misinformation from our side. And so I'm always urging people to say, okay, take a step back. As Ronald Reagan used to tell us, you know, no one agrees with you all every time. If someone agrees with you 7 out of 10 times, 8 out of 10 times, they're your friend, not your enemy. And I think as conservative, as principled conservatives, we need to remember that and we need to be a little bit more unified. Right now there's a lot of disunity, there's a lot of finger-pointing, and there's a lot of purity tests. And I think as a result of that, we're seeing the left roll up victory after victory. And they're able to, you know, now they're trying to undermine the judiciary.
Former Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich has been our guest. Mark, we got to wrap it up because we're up against the top of the hour and a really hard break. But I tell you what, you know, I'm frightened by anybody who's not willing to debate. COVID policy, the border, inflation, all these things need to be argued about, and we need to be free to have those arguments, and that is at the official level and among citizens. And if you don't do that, you lose the republic. Mark, thanks for being part of the program.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks.
Hey, hour two of Fox Across America is coming up after the top of the hour. Hope you'll stick around. Oh, yes, it is. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on hour two of Fox Across America on this Thursday. It's you and me today and tomorrow. Jimmy gets back to work on Monday after he took time off following his efforts on behalf of the Fox News Channel and the 4th of July celebration this week. Jimmy will be back in the chair on Monday. Meanwhile, it's you and me and your calls at 888-788-9910. We spent the first hour talking about the fact that a federal district court in Louisiana, in a case styled Missouri v. Biden, it's the states of Missouri and Louisiana who are parties to the suit, sued the Biden administration over the fact that the Biden administration has been using been making regular contact with the social media companies to suppress anybody who disagrees with the administration. Been stifling free speech. They can't do it directly. Under the First Amendment, the free speech clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution, they can't do it directly, so they've been doing it indirectly. And it really got started in earnest during the COVID pandemic, and it continued through the election when it became clear that they had a problem with Hunter Biden and his abandoned laptop, and the government has colluded, actively worked with the big tech companies to keep you from saying what you think about what's going on in the world, including debating what to do about COVID and including sharing information that might be detrimental to the campaign of Joe Biden. The government's been doing that. That springs from an elitist point of view. This comes from a deeply held idea by particularly those in the left, but to a certain degree, even rhinos on the right. It comes from an establishment elitist idea that says that you, what you think can't matter because you are not part of the inner circle. You are not properly credentialed. You didn't go to Harvard or Yale or Princeton. You are not elite. You are out there with your opinions that don't really matter because you're just not smart enough. It is purely an elitist point of view. That's why they don't want to hear from you. They don't want you to have a voice because it gets in their way. And what is overlooked in this is the very people they're trying to suppress are the very backbone of the country. One of the greatest things that emerged from July 4th, 1776, which we celebrated 2 days ago, that established this country on the North American continent pretty quickly in the scheme of history, there emerged something on the earth that had never existed before. It was called the middle class, because all over the world prior to that and all over the world to this very day in a lot of places, what you have is a very, very, very tiny cohort of people who are very, very, very rich, and you have a massive number of people who are very, very poor and very few people in between. In the United States, we created the middle class. It's an American invention. And the members of the middle class, if you're in the middle class, you're living your life not just trying to survive. You're living your life on purpose. You're living your life able to enjoy life and to know that nominally you have plenty to eat and a good roof over your head and you're properly clothed and your kids are getting educated and you can do things besides work. You have the money and the resources to go on vacations and to play golf and own a boat and to do the things that you do during leisure time when you have enough success to where your basic needs are met. You have excess of what you need in order to get by. The middle class is absolutely miraculous, and it was invented in this country, and it's absolutely fabulous. And every politician says that they're all about the middle class. The fact is the middle class has been taking it on the chin in this country for about 35 years. And Joe Biden recognizes that the middle class is important. He said he's obsessed with the middle class. He will tell you it's the spine of the U.S. economy, as he regularly puts it. He says he's all about the middle class. The problem is middle class is not doing so well under the Biden administration. The middle class is suffering. We in the middle class, and I'm one of them. I'm not mega wealthy. I've done okay for myself, but I'm a middle class guy, and I'm from a father who worked his way into the middle class, and I'm from a grandfather who worked his way into the middle class. The middle class has, for a long time, for about 30 years, real income did not keep up with inflation. The middle class has been losing wealth and influence for about 30 years. We had a respite from that. Statistically, the Bureau of Labor Statistics figures showed that the middle class was doing better during the Trump administration, began actually gaining ground again. But that has been wiped out in the period of time since Joe Biden took office. And the middle class is feeling anxious. The middle class is not doing as well. It doesn't feel as good as it did for a while. The average middle-class household has lost $30,000 in wealth in the 2.5 years that Joe Biden has been president. So what about you? Chances are you're a member of the middle class. It's about 100 million people strong in this country. How's it going with you? 888-788-9910. Are you doing better or worse? What do you expect? What do you expect in the coming year and a half before this administration ends? As I said, average real wealth for middle-class households, according to Bloomberg, has dropped by $33,000 in the past year. Just 46% of middle-class Republicans responding to a Harris poll said their personal financial situation was better than it was 5 years ago when Donald Trump was in the White House. Only 35% say that they expect things to get better in the next year. Only 43% of even Democrats expect things to get better in the next year. So how are you doing? 888-788-9910. This is a, the middle class is key, and I think Donald Trump has a middle class problem. And certainly Donald Trump, certainly he connected with the middle class and the working class. Certainly he did. It's amazing that a billionaire could be so relatable to the common working man. It's amazing that the guy who counts his wealth in billions of dollars understands the guy who counts his wealth in thousands of dollars. Donald Trump had an amazing capacity to connect with that particular voter during the 2016 campaign. Does he still have that? Is that relatability still there? And is he the guy? These are the things that are going to shape the 2024 election. The middle class is going to decide who is going to be president. Right now, if I'm Joe Biden, I'm nervous. And, you know, all the things going on the chaos on the Republican side notwithstanding, if I'm Joe Biden, if I'm the Democrats, they do have a middle class problem because the middle class is not feeling good about itself at the moment. And the middle class is the backbone of the economy. It is the middle class. It's people in the middle, middle and upper middle that establish new businesses. It is people in the middle and upper middle who buy the things that you buy when your basic needs are met. They're the ones that are going and putting in, you know, swapping out the appliances in the kitchen and buying new TVs and going on vacations and buying new cars. You got to have that great big cohort of Americans in order for the economy to work. And Joe Biden's got a problem with them. And it's a real problem, and it's going to, if it continues at this pace with interest rates going up and things costing more, the problem's only going to get worse. So the question is, if you're a member, if you're just in that big, great, big, glorious middle that drives the American economy, if you're living in a nice house in a nice neighborhood, driving a nice car, how are you doing? Are you feeling good about the future? Do you want to vote this administration in? They think you should. They're calling it Bidenomics. And they're saying that things are going so well that you should give them another 4 years. You feeling that? Because I'm not feeling that. And I know this. I know that as the cost of money goes up, as interest rates go up, the ability for people in the middle class to afford homes goes down. The ability for people to afford new cars goes down. This massive uptick in inflation and in interest rates is having a profound impact on members of the middle class. And, of course, it always whacks the poor. It always, the poor suffer no matter what. So how are you feeling about all of that? And, you know, what is your expectation for the future? I'm always excited when the middle class is doing well. The best friend that the country can have is economic growth above 4%. When you get economic growth in the fours instead of the twos where we have it now, when you get robust economic growth, which is what we had when Trump was president, when you get robust economic growth, everybody gets happy. Everybody gets happier. Everything works better. And you get investment, and you get optimism, and you get robust car sales and robust new home sales, and you get people going to the furniture store swapping out the tired old furniture in the family room for brand new furniture, and you get people buying boats, and you get people, you know, taking up golf and doing the things that make life fun to live. That's what you get when you have a robust economy, and that's what you get when you have a robust middle class. And we don't really have that kind of robust growth, and we have a middle class right now. According to data from Bloomberg, according to an article written in Bloomberg News today, this week, the middle class is not feeling it, and it's going to be the middle class that decides who the next president is. So I really want to know from you, how's things for you? What is your life like today? And compare and contrast it to what it was 5 years ago when Donald Trump was newly elected as president. 888-788-9910, 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America.
the show that's crashing the establishment party.
I don't recall seeing your name on the guest list.
Nothing to be embarrassed about. I sometimes go by my maiden name.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Wages up 8.7% since 2019. Cost of gasoline to put in your car up 34%. Property taxes up 19%. Housing up 13%. Food up by about 12%. So getting squeezed. The middle class is getting squeezed. What are your thoughts? Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America, 888-788-9910. Gary in Lake Stryker, Texas. You're up. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to about what you were talking about, where I recently had to renew my contract for my electricity. And
that was fun. Bet that was fun. We just did the same thing. We're doing it, did it yesterday for my company in Tonner, my radio stations. We buy a lot of electricity. Yeah. We operate four transmitters.
I listen to your station all the time, and I love it. And, they won't do a two-year contract anymore. Because the last contract was 2 years, and I had a heck of a deal. I was at 5.4 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, not now.
So this contract was 13.2 kilowatt
hour. That's correct.
I mean, it went up double and or triple almost.
Almost triple. Yeah.
So I'm a transplant from Central New York, and I'm a retired cop, and so I'm semi-retired. I work part time, but. And I lived very comfortably, but the fact remains is, I guess I can't get my mind around how does someone who voted for Joe Biden or look at it objectively even begin to think that they should vote for this nonsense anymore?
Because they don't connect the dots. They don't connect when you kneecap the energy industry. You curtail supply. When you curtail supply of the input for electricity, the price of electricity is going to go up.
Well, I also think that the Democrats have done a phenomenal job of tapping into that era of kids that just live by their phone. Everything in life is an app. And I think they've been able to tap into that better than the GOP.
Yep.
And in all honesty, when you have a GOP leader like we currently have running the Republican Party, she lost in 2020, lost in 2022, and I don't know why she was rehired.
You're talking about Ronald McDaniel running the Republican National Committee? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not going to be the – and, I mean, I hate to say it, but they're going to have to get into this mail-in balloting and ballot harvesting because it's – that's how the Democrats are pulling off these wins.
Well, you're 100% correct.
I'm not a fan, but in the words of the late great Rush Limbaugh, the Democrats know how to wield power, and the Republicans seem to not be able to do it.
Yeah, that's true. And the Republicans have resisted, and you know, I will confess, I have resisted. I like the idea of Election Day. Make it a federal holiday. Everything closes. We all go on the same day and vote. We count the votes that night. We figure out who won. I think that's the way it ought to be. But that's, you know, how it ought to be and how it is are two different things. The reality is it's not that way. It's not going to be that way ever again. We're going to have early voting. We're going to have mail-in balloting. We're going to have all of these things. And the Democrats play all that like a strad. And the Republicans keep hoping for the good old days. And the Republicans had better get on board and understand if this is how the game is going to be played, you better suit up and play it. Otherwise, you're going to continue to lose. Hey, listen, good stuff. Gary, appreciate the call. We have time for one more. Aurora, Sarasota, Florida, what's on your mind?
Paul, I can't even begin to tell you how I've suffered since 2020, March 17th.
I hate that.
It's been unbelievable. I never thought in a million years our country would ever shut down. And not only our country, but the world. What a kind of plandemic have we been put through?
Well,
what is this all about? Our beaches here in Florida are now completely crowded with illegals. Our lifestyle, you can't get a hotel or a motel room because they're all given vouchers and they all stay in them for free across America. Okay, well, I've traveled. I know. I put up with the suffering. We lost our business because we couldn't get any more funding. Everybody was afraid to fund anything that didn't have to do with homelessness.
Hey, what kind of business, Aurora?
Technology. Technology development, which is very important to the world. And I'm telling you, they're going the wrong route. We wanted to come out with technology at Intellect, I-N-T-A-L-E-K, where we could give people the possibility of having their own power units in their homes.
All right.
And, of course, everybody wants to keep us tethered.
Hey, listen, Aurora, I hate to be rude, but I've got to cut you off there. Listen, I wish you the best of success. You're in Florida. You're in a better place than a lot of people are in the country in terms of having opportunity in a free and open economy, and I wish you the very best. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. Dr. Michael Burgess is coming up after the bottom of the hour. Stay with us. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America this Thursday of July 4th week. Jimmy's has the week off. He'll be back on Monday. I'm with you the rest of the show today and again tomorrow. And I love hearing from you at 888-788-9910. Right now on the line, though, we have my friend Dr. Michael Burgess, a member of Congress from Texas's 26th District representing North Texas. Congressman, thanks for being on board today. Appreciate it.
Hey, Paul. Good to hear from you.
Good talking to you. And again, thank you for your time. Just a personal note, thank you for your time in your office a couple of weeks ago when we were there trying to promote the health of the AM radio band. A lot of people listening to this show right now are listening on AM radio. We appreciate that.
Tune in your car.
Okay, good for you. You sit on House Energy and Commerce. You sit on the House Rules Committee. You're on the House Budget Committee. And you spent nearly 30 years as a practicing physician. So there's a whole lot of things we've been talking about that you can address here. In the previous segment, we're talking about the status of the middle class, and which will affect, you know, who wins the presidency. I think running the country is easy. Keep energy prices low. Keep federal spending to the necessary minimum so you don't spark inflation. Keep taxes low and keep regulations low. You'll have a booming economy. You'll have a vibrant middle class. Am I crazy?
No. Yeah, that's the formula. Spending, of course, is a continuing problem, and it will be, boy, it'll be big time on display as we go through the appropriations process. We're going to see on the House side trying to hold it back. Who thought we didn't spend enough money in 2022? But we're trying to roll it back to 2022 levels. Of course, Democrats are having a fit, and the Senate said they're not going to do that. So we'll see. I mean, it's an interesting fight that's coming up.
Well, I was trying to explain this to my daughter. She recently graduated from college. You know, she's out moving out on her own. She's just totally distressed by what things cost. And I'm trying to explain to her, when you have been through a pandemic and you've shut down the economy and you've curtailed the supply chain and you have a lot of pent-up demand and you have a shortage of a whole lot of things, you suddenly dump $1.9 trillion worth of liquidity into that economy, you're going to get inflation.
Yes, and I don't think the final figure was actually as low as $1.9 trillion. I think it was many multiples of that, which only proves the point and made it worse. So the president now says, hey, it's coming down. Well, you never should have gone up that high. Don't look at this as a victory.
and still unacceptably high. If the Fed target rate is 2%, it's still a multiple of that, even though it's come down.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll just share with you something I do not understand. Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, and Janet Yellen is the Secretary of Treasury, both of them, in March of 2021, said inflation will not be a problem. And, of course, the American Rescue Plan came forward with $1.9 trillion, quickly followed by an infrastructure bill that was way more than it needed to be.
The Inflation Reduction Act.
And then the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
So altogether, closer to $6 trillion in the space of the first 2 years of the Biden administration. And I've asked the question in other venues, is he at war with the middle class? Because if you were at war with the middle class, that's what you would have done. And then to cap it all off, you take your gas stove away from you.
Meanwhile, did you see Vice President Kamala Harris grilling hamburgers and hot dogs out on her gas grill over the July 4th break? Did you see that?
No, I missed that.
Okay,
I wasn't invited.
Yeah, well, I was, and I would have said that I had a prior engagement if I had been invited. But yeah, she's out on her gas grill grilling hot dogs and hamburgers. You know. Using a gas appliance, which we're not supposed to use, and eating beef, which we're not supposed to do because cow flatulence is ruining the planet. So it's interesting how all of this works. Listen, we started the hour off with the big story that broke really yesterday, but it is a result of a federal court ruling late in the day on the 4th of July that clips the Biden administration's wings with respect to colluding with social media to suppress free speech, your First Amendment rights. And I'm asking you this as a physician now, because really that got started in earnest during the pandemic when there were some dissenting voices from the administration, from the government's prescriptions for dealing with the pandemic, the lockdowns, the mask mandates, all of that. Some dissenting voices arose and they were quickly shut down by social media. Do you not agree that it was worth debating shutting down the economy?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And look, a fair amount of grace with a once-in-a-century pandemic, but come back and revisit it. And, yes, open up the channels for information to flow. Don't shut them off. The biggest quarrel I had with the director of the CDC was show some humility when you come forward with these pronouncements and then you have to walk it back a month or two later. Don't just double down on things and tell people you were always right. You weren't always right. And people will give you some leeway in a crisis situation. But be honest with people, and part of honesty is being open and transparent. I started from the very early days trying to get classified briefings on the origins of this darn thing because it did look pretty suspicious that there was the Wuhan Institute of Virology, as now John Stewart has so eloquently proposed the origin. It originated in a city where they were working on these viruses on purpose, an accident, but it sure looked like that. And, you know, now 2.5 years later, 3 years later, come to find out that that is in fact what was going on.
Well, and if you stated what appeared to be the obvious, shouldn't you have been allowed to state that? And then if anybody disagrees, including the sitting administration, they're free to argue. Why sure. Silence? Why silence the questioner on that? Why not engage?
I can't answer that for you, especially when you have a situation where it was a novel virus. No one had ever seen this this behavior before. All of the public health measures that had worked with SARS-1 and MERS didn't work this time because the incubation period was so long, during which time a person could be infective before they were symptomatic. And that two-week exposure is what made this very, very difficult to control from a public health standpoint. Well, our public health people instead of acknowledging that and saying we're going to have a tough time with normal public health measures like quarantine and contact tracing, it may not be enough. And appropriately, the administration then, with Operation Warp Speed, really put a lot of effort into let's come up with viral countermeasures, let's come up with vaccines. The countermeasures, as in retrospect, the countermeasures were probably just as important as anything else. But the cupboard was bare when the virus first came upon the scene. There was no antiviral. There was no monoclonal antibody. All of that had to be developed in real time. And to people's credit, they did a great job with that. But I'll never forget, and it was Anthony Fauci who took a lot of credit for controlling the first SARS outbreak in 2023 by using just standard public health measures. But those wouldn't work when you've got a two-week interval between exposure and symptoms, all of that time being infective. That's what was so difficult.
Well, again, and so that I just learned something, but the problem that I have is if you said anything, Scott Atlas, the doctor from Stanford, Jay Bhattacharya, sure, if anybody, including me, in my own postings, if I questioned the wisdom of what was happening, I didn't get a learned response. I was just simply silenced.
Correct. And the masks, of course, just to give you an example of how inconsistent things were in the Capitol building itself. On the House side, we had to wear masks. We were fined if we didn't, coming on the House floor. But on the Senate side, they did not. Now, arguably, the Senate is an older population. And if anything we did learn about this virus, it's a little harder on older people. But there must have been something magical about the Capitol Rotunda that destroyed a virus that wouldn't let it penetrate the Senate chambers.
Because I guess
we were all running around with masks on under the orders of Nancy Pelosi. And they said it was CDC guidance, but then the CDC said they didn't give that guidance. What a mess. It made it difficult to work in that environment. It's difficult to debate when you have a mask on.
Well, let's shift gears. Dr. Michael Burgess, he's a congressman from the 26th District of Texas, is our guest here on Fox Across America. Let's shift gears, put your energy and commerce hat back on. Let's talk about energy.
Sure.
You know, the Texas grid has, you know, been in the news a lot, but electricity generation in general is in the news. We have an administration that is avowedly saying they want to eliminate the use of fossil fuels, yet here in Texas, more than 40% of our energy generation comes from fossil fuels, and we're one of the best in the country at wind and solar, so it's worse in other states. How are we going to square this circle from what the administration says versus what is really going to happen?
Well, the real tragedy is in all of the discussion, it's only recently that nuclear has come back and been part of the discussion. We do have the two large legacy, what I call legacy nuclear plants, the Comanche Peak and the South Texas Project. You don't hear much about these. They're just quietly producing electrons. It took them forever to be built and come online. The one at Comanche Peak, I know, could be expanded. That was part of the Energy Policy Act of 2003 that was passed my first year in the Congress. So there is a potential for expanding, again, the so-called legacy nuclear, just building the footprint where they already exist. You don't have to have a new nuclear power plant in someone else's backyard. Sure, I'm a proponent of the small modular reactors. I do think those show a lot of promise. But let's not turn our back on what we know works. And the large legacy nuclear plants are working. And the fact that around the country they are people are seeking to decommission them, that's a mistake. And it shouldn't be happening. If anything, we should be increasing the capacity of the existing nuclear power plants.
Do we ever get to the point that the Biden administration so assiduously says we should, of not using oil and natural gas and coal for power generation?
Look, the Biden administration has made an enormous bet on offshore wind, and I'm not sold on that conceptually. It seems like a massively expensive project. It has not been tested on the scale that they are trying to develop. I pray they're right with the type of investment that the American taxpayer has been asked to make. But it is this is an untried technology. When we have technologies that do work and our nuclear, our natural gas fired power plants, or even our coal-fired power plants, are some of the cleanest in the world, and why we would mothball those facilities with the hope that we're going to be able to create and then distribute offshore wind energy all over the country. The build-out of the electric grid is going to be it's going to be unlike the scale anyone's ever seen before in order to get this energy from the coastal areas into the interior of the country.
Meanwhile, we're all supposed to go out and buy an electric vehicle and put that on the grid at the same time.
Yeah, unless they tell you not to.
Unless they tell you in California, get an electric vehicle. That's the only time we're going to let you buy, but don't plug it in.
Yeah. You know, some of this stuff you just can't make up.
Yeah.
Look, between you and me, I don't think Biden should be the nominee of his party for another term. But then you see waiting in the wings is Gavin Newsom, and he's come up with some of these ideas that really just defy gravity. So maybe Biden is the best of that lot. But, oh, my gosh, I hope.
There's a commentary for you, isn't it? Biden's the best of the lot.
Well, look, you started off this conversation about the middle class. I truly pray that the middle class can get through the next 18 months of this administration. All of these cabinet secretaries, you know, people say, hey, shouldn't we impeach Mayorkas? Shouldn't we impeach this person or that person? There's not a one of them that is worth leaving in the job. This is the most incompetent administration that I have ever seen. I can't get a phone call answered from a federal agency. Cabinet secretaries are just completely they do not understand where the funding for their departments comes from, because so much of it has been done by omnibus and continuing resolutions and big omnibus bills. So there's not that close association with, hey, the legislative branch appropriates you the money to run your agency, which is the way the Constitution designed it. But they're completely removed from that. And they think the money just appears magically and that they do not have to answer questions from Congress. I've never seen anything like this.
Michael Burgess, Congressman from the 26th District of Texas, thanks for your time today. Have a good rest of your week, and we really appreciate it.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Bye-bye. All right. Take care. It's Fox Across America, Paul Gleiser for Jimmy Failla. More of the show's coming up. Stick around.
He's the most talented man on the radio, but he needs your help.
We all know somewhere underneath all of that bright color, there's a man who's not right.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It's Fox Across America. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here and taking your calls, 888-788-9910. If you're on hold, we're going to get to you because I love taking calls from across the country when I fill in on this show. It's just a lot of fun. I have a very simple prescription, as I was talking to Dr. Michael Burgess, from Congressman from Texas, in the previous segment. Real simple prescription for running the country. And it's just not that hard. It's low energy prices. Keep energy prices low with an all-of-the-above energy strategy. Where wind makes sense, use wind. Where solar makes sense, use solar. Where nuclear makes sense, use nuclear. Drill, use oil, natural gas, coal, use it all. Keep energy prices low. Keep federal spending low to minimize inflation. Keep taxes low and keep regulation on the business, on the on, on the on the business community, particularly small business, keep the regulation burden light. You do all of those things. If you're the president who does all those things, you will win re-election, and the country will do great. It's just not that complicated. Hey, it's Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. The third hour's coming up. You need to stick around. It's going to be fun. Don't go away. Oh, yes, it is. Fox Across America, thanks for being here. Hour three of our extravaganza here on a Thursday. Wanting to hear from you, 888-788-9910. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla, and I'm inviting you to follow me on my weekly column I write every week. It's called You Tell Me Texas. It's at youtellmetexas.com. It's because I'm doing it from Texas. I own radio stations in Texas. I'm a proud Fox Across America affiliate in Texas, KTBB, Tyler Longview. I want to hear from you. And I want I say what's on my mind, you say what's on yours, and you can comment from anywhere. Don't have to be in Texas, but it's called YouTellMeTexas.com. Meanwhile, I want to hear from you live on the air right now in real time at 888-788-9910. Toward that end, we have Les in Corning, New York. Les, what's on your mind?
I'm a single white guy, straight.
Lord help you.
And entitled to nothing.
Right.
Except for free speech and to live the way I want to live. I'm in upstate New York, sole proprietor. 5 years ago, I had three dump trucks, employed two drivers. They made $30,000 each a year. I grossed around $160,000 to $200,000 a year. Today, I'm one truck, myself, sole proprietor. I'm on target for $60,000 a year.
And what does your truck drive around? What do you do?
I work construction. Right now I'm on a school site. They're spending a ton of money on schools in our area, which is good for us, good for me. But before, you know, I had trucks going to many different jobs, construction jobs, road construction and like that.
Okay.
But
and when,
here
what,
in New,
I'm here sorry
in
to
New
interrupt
York,
you.
We're, oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. What led to your to this precipitous decline?
My taxes doubled. I could write a check and pay my income tax. Now I make payments. My taxes didn't go. My taxes went up, and my
yeah,
income
but why'd you,
went
why'd
way
you
down.
Lose the two other trucks, and why'd your gross go down by $100,000?
Couldn't afford them. Now there wasn't
okay.
any work. And so cutbacks and, you know, I can get a loan, but if I want to pay 6%, 7% on the loan, and we're regulated here in New York State, I have to prove I own the truck. I've had the same truck for 15 years. I have to prove that my taxes for that truck are paid. I have to prove my residency. I've lived at the same residence for 20 years. And or they will not issue me plates or registration for my truck. I pay road tax. I pay heavy vehicle use tax, which is about $500 a year. I pay a highway use tax. Can't double tax, so you just change the alphabet. It goes to the same fund, and that's per mile. I pay a $360 fee for a permit to haul a weight which the truck is built to haul. But in New York, if you don't have that, you can't haul a big load or a normal size load. But I have to prove that I have all this with a copy of my driver's license, or I cannot get license plates for this vehicle, for this truck, or any truck, class eight truck in New
well,
York
I'm,
State.
Listen, I'm sure trucks are taxed in other states, and I'm sure you know you've mm-hmm. got to.
Oh,
we all have to pay road taxes, highway taxes. We all have to pay that. I do know about New York. It is a tax happy state, and we here in Texas, living here in Texas, are just amazed at what people willingly pay in taxes in New York, because. Here in Texas, there'll be every now and then when money gets tight, you have a recession, money gets tight for the Texas legislature. Some guy will float the idea of an income tax, and that person is never seen again. He just vanishes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I mean, we have to have them. You know, we have to have a tax. And And I just think in New York, we're paying more than our fair share.
Well, so again, I'm going to try to drill back down to what you were talking about, though. What happened in the 3 years where you went from $160,000 to $60,000 in gross income? What changed?
Well, they changed the regulations. They started regulating more, you know, more taxes. My truck is a 1988. I get stopped in a DOT check and get complimented on how well my truck is for a 1988. Okay.
Okay.
They're on score of regulating me out of business, people with these old trucks. Like California, this truck is illegal in California. Everybody has got a truck like this in California. They're for sale.
You're illustrating the things that I said before the top of the hour. You want to have a booming economy. You want four things. You want to have a successful nation. You want four things. Keep energy prices low by making sure that you have adequate supplies. Get it from every source that you can. Keep federal spending and government spending at the minimum, because if you keep government spending at a minimum, you don't trigger off inflation. Keep taxes low and keep regulation low. And right. When you do those things, everybody gets a fighting chance to succeed.
Sure. Exactly. And here in New York, there everything they can do to fight that. It seems to be happening. I mean, I'm in Corning, New York, was Corning Incorporated, Corning Glassworks,
yeah, sure.
Corning Fiber Optics, Ingersoll Rand, now Dresser Rand. Those places are just, you know, it's getting to be more and more office people, less and less factory people. Everybody thinks we're building, you know, they're building the exhaust systems for the class 8 trucks. They got a plant here in Corning, great for the jobs, it's killing the truck industry, but 90% of it's made in China. They built that factory here. Look at this. We created U.S. jobs here in New York, but the big factories are in China.
Why don't you get out of New York, Les?
You got a lot for sale down there in Texas?
No, yeah, we got a lot of land in Texas. There's plenty of elbow room in Texas.
I keep saying everything I own, I could pack in the back of this truck and just start driving. But the problem is the states between would probably pull me over and I wouldn't have a proper sticker or something.
Oh, get an in-transit sticker and come to Texas. I tell you what, you'll find, you know, relatively speaking, and there's no place that's perfect, and we have our bureaucracy here too. But I tell you what, mm-hmm. You'll find a more business-friendly environment here than you have in New York. I guarantee you.
I talk about it all the time, and it gets to be more and more closer to reality. It really does. Well, everything I have is paid for. I have no loans. I have no, you know, my vehicles are paid for and my house is paid for. And you would think I would be doing way better than I am. I was. Trump came in and was like, you know, I went from paying 20 grand a year in income taxes to like 7. Just cutting regulation, just cutting, you know, that kind of stuff. So
this is the part that people
bought another truck, and yeah, I bought another truck and put a guy to work.
This is the part of the Trump presidency that gets overlooked. It got, you know, the pandemic crowded it out, plus all of the Trump drama crowded it out, plus all of the everything that was done in the most horrible, nefarious way possible to try to take Trump out, crowded it out. But what happened when you cut through all of that clutter is the guy came in, he slashed regulations, he got a massive tax cut bill passed, and things took off. And economic conditions started getting better. I remember when he got elected, he took office in January of 2017, and not a lot happened, and we kind of loped along, and business conditions were not great. And then all of a sudden, on October 1st, it was like somebody flipped a switch. October 1st of 2017, business started to take off, and my company had its best years. And a whole lot of my clients, they had their best years. This is the part of Trump we would love to have back if we could get it. His management of the economy and the things that he did that allowed the economy to take off and prosper so that you could have the prosperity you enjoyed, that's what we want from Donald Trump. And that was the stuff, that was the pure Trump magic. And all kinds of forces aligned against him to be able to politically capitalize on that success, not the least of which was the Wuhan virus. But underneath all of it, we had enormous success with Trump as president. The economy did extremely well. Well, Les, listen, I wish you the best, my man. I hope things get better for you.
Yes, I think it will.
Well, listen, one of the things about sole proprietors and entrepreneurs, if you're not an optimist, you're not one of those. You have to be optimistic to be in business for yourself. Take it from me. I've been doing it since 1991. Les, I wish you all the best. Take care. 888-788-9910. Yeah, this is the thing that is just totally lost on a whole lot of people. When you have an expanding economy, it is by far the best anti-poverty program you can come up with. An expanding economy creates opportunities for employment. It creates entry-level jobs. It creates mid-level jobs. It creates jobs at the top. It allows everybody to find their place and get in and start working their way up. An expanding economy is the healthiest thing you can do. It starts solving all kinds of other social problems. A robust, growing economy. It is the secret sauce to a successful society. That was what Trump had going for him. It's what Reagan had going for him. You want to know how much it went for Reagan? Reagan took those horrible malaise years of the Carter administration and turned them into the greatest economic expansion in our history. We had economic growth at 7.5% during the Reagan years. And guess what? In 1984, during that election, he took 49 states. That's how happy people were with the way the country was going during the Reagan years. And Reagan did the same thing. He cut taxes and he got regulators off of people's backs. And since the Reagan years, we've allowed taxes to go back up, and we've certainly allowed regulations to get piled on top of one, on top of the other, on top of the other, on top of the other. And we have made it harder for energy producers to keep us supplied with energy. We made it harder to build a building. We made it harder to open a business. We made it harder to do everything. And this is what you get. You get this kind of stuck in second gear that we have right now. And all you got to do, if Joe Biden, I'll say this, Joe Biden's going to have a tough time. I think it's just going to be a real tough election for everybody on either ticket. But Joe Biden would waltz to re-election if he had simply gotten elected and left everything that Trump was doing in place. If he just left everything alone and said, okay, I'm going to go try these other new things, but the stuff that's already here, we're going to leave it alone. We're going to let the border stay the way it is. And he could have said, hey, you know, the border, the wall is up and all that, but that was my predecessor. I didn't do that. He could have escaped political consequences with that, just saying, just blame it on Trump. You'd blame everything else on Trump. He could have kept energy policy in place. He could have kept the Keystone XL pipeline going. He said, yo, that got started under my predecessor. He would have had political cover. Just leave everything in place, and he would be in a lot better shape. His approval ratings would be higher, and he'd be a lot harder for Republicans to think about knocking off in 2024. He's made himself vulnerable by not doing the things that makes an economy work, and that is keep energy prices low, keep federal spending down so you don't touch off inflation, keep taxes as low as you can, consistent with the needs of the government, and keep regulations as light as you can. You do all of those things, and the economy will take care of itself. It's an American miracle. We here in the United States, starting going back 247 years, we invented the idea of self-determination and a self-guiding economy by millions of people making discrete decisions about what's in their best self-interest. That all adds together to prosperity. It's really not that hard to figure out. Yet we have politicians tripping over themselves all the time. Listen, I'd love to hear from you on that. 888-788-9910. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America.
A show so good, it moves the stock market.
The Dow racing up on Jimmy's remarks.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It's Fox Across America. I'm Paul Gleiser. I'm filling in for Jimmy today. Filling in for him again tomorrow. He will be back on Monday. We got Miranda Devine coming up after the bottom of the hour in the next segment. Miranda Devine is a fabulous columnist for the New York Post, And she was directly affected by the censorship of social media that went on prior to the election. But meanwhile, we have James in Joplin, Missouri, with us right now on the line at 888-788-9910. So, James, what say you?
How you doing?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
I do. What's up?
Oh, how you doing? Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, everything you were talking about with the middle class, I think that's really going to be the big change in the election this year because everyone's feeling it. There's those of us that have struggled through the last, you know, 2 or 3 years of, you know, spiraling down since the pandemic. And I haven't seen yet anything that this administration has done to help that. I mean, it just continually gets worse. You know, even when you think it can't get any worse, it does. I think we're the laughingstock of the world right now.
Middle-class households, according to Bloomberg, for their analysis of Bureau of Labor Statistics consumer expenditure data, according to Bloomberg, middle-class households spent an average of $8,000 more in 2022 than they did in 2019, far outpacing the increase in wages that happened during that period. So middle class is getting squeezed, as happens whenever policy goes off the rails in Washington.
Actually, you're 100% correct. I've been saying for years that the wages are not keeping up with the economy. They're near what we should be. You know, in the 1950s and 60s, a man could get a regular job, you know, maybe middle class or just below. And the wife could stay home, take care of the kids, and he could have 9 of them. But
this is all true. This is all true.
We're not poor. Now, this next generation that's coming up, if they have 1 or 2 kids and God forbid if one goes to college, they're in the poorhouse right out of the gate.
And part of that is driven. Part of that is by is driven. To be completely fair, it's driven by expectations. Because you know, I was one of those kids that grew up during that time, and we didn't consider ourselves poor at all. But I got to tell you, we didn't have anywhere near the number of nice things that we have now. You know, it's not exactly apples to apples. But your broad point is correct. We could live a comfortable life as I did growing up, with my dad making a good middle-class income. And my mom stayed home and made sure I got to school and I had clothes on my back and I had, you know, lunch to eat. And families up and down the street were pumping out babies, and it's different than it is now. We have smaller number of kids, and it's harder to maintain a middle-class lifestyle because of a whole lot of factors. The point being that the middle class is the absolute backbone of free market economy. It's the backbone of Western democracies. The middle class is what makes all of these things possible. And if you squeeze the middle class too hard and make them go away, the golden goose will stop laying the golden eggs. Hey, listen, I appreciate your call there, James, and you be safe there in the middle of the country there in Joplin. We have Miranda Devine coming up. I always love talking to Miranda. She is really, really sharp, and she'll have a lot to say. That's in the next segment after the bottom of the hour. Hope you'll stick around here on Fox Across America. Fox Across America with Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla continues, and we are delighted to have on the line none other than Miranda Devine from the New York Post, who helped break the story of the Hunter Biden laptop back in October of 2020. Miranda, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, great to be with you, Paul.
Listen, I thought of you immediately when I heard the story of the ruling that came out of the federal district court in Louisiana, the injunction that was issued, telling the Biden administration they can no longer get on the phone and call up Facebook and say, hey, censor this story or take that story down or take that post down. Don't let them criticize us anymore. The New York Post, you personally and you as in your organization, experienced that in October of 2020 when you broke the story and Twitter took down your account. Relive that for us.
Yes, that's exactly right. Twitter and Facebook, within a few hours of our story going live on our website, this story about Hunter Biden's laptop, both Twitter and Facebook censored us, and Twitter actually locked the New York Post account for the next more than 2 weeks. This was, 3 weeks before the election, so it was a crucial time. And we subsequently learned through various methods that the FBI had basically pre-bunked our story to Twitter and probably to Facebook and the other platforms as well. They were having these weekly meetings before the election, and we know from Joel Roth, who said in a sworn statement in another court case, he said that during one of those meetings that they were told to expect a hack and leak operation involving Hunter Biden, likely sometime in October. And so that was our story about Hunter Biden in October. So, of course, the big tech companies, Facebook and Twitter, recognized immediately what they'd been being warned about, and that's why they were able to bring the shutters down and close us off so quickly. And the judge in this lawsuit you just mentioned, brought by Louisiana and Missouri, Judge Terry Doughty, has written this absolutely brilliant memo, really standing up for free speech. And he singled out the FBI's role in the censorship of our story as particularly troubling. And he pointed out the FBI had the laptop for more than a year by then, and they knew that what we were writing was true, but they still pre-bunked our story.
Which is absolutely amazing to me. The FBI, I grew up watching the show on the ABC television network called The FBI, and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. was this pillar of rectitude, and he got the bad guys, and the FBI had a sterling reputation among a whole generation of Americans, and they waste it for political purposes like this. It is astonishing to me that the FBI would, in my opinion, I don't see how you can say they didn't violate the law by using material they know to be false to go out and get warrants to surveil a presidential campaign. How is that not illegal? I can't believe the FBI would engage in such lawbreaking, and I have to ask the question, do they just hate Trump that much?
Look, I do think this is the motivation, because you see the same behavior during that period, during the Trump administration, across all these different law enforcement agencies, and plus the CIA. Just a few days after our story came out, we had that dirty 51 letter, I call it, from the 51 former intelligence officials, mostly from the CIA, including five former directors or acting directors of the CIA. They signed that letter, lying, dishonest letter, trying to persuade the American people that the Hunter Biden laptop, that our stories, all the material we'd published, was Russian disinformation. And it was preposterous, and the DNI, John Ratcliffe, came out immediately, as did less vociferously Bill Barr and Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, and said, no, there is absolutely zero evidence that this has anything to do with Russia or is Russian disinformation. But it didn't matter, because the purpose of that letter was to debunk our story and to give Joe Biden a get-out-of-jail-free card at the upcoming debate that he had with Donald Trump. And, of course, as soon as the topic came up, of course, Donald Trump brought it up, and Joe Biden immediately just cited the 51 former intelligence officials and said that they all said that it was a Russian plant and it was just garbage. And so it got him off the hook. It worked. So that was just another example. And I think that all these people, some of the people who signed that letter, you would think were patriots, have certainly served their country in the past in admirable ways. You would imagine that people at the FBI aren't all sort of evil people wanting to bring America down, that they too, at one point, at least some of them, were patriots. And I think that so severe was Trump derangement syndrome, that a lot of these people in Washington, D.C. had convinced themselves that Donald Trump was an existential threat. And therefore,
and it had to be stopped at all costs.
Exactly.
And no matter, even if you have to break the law, you have to stop Donald Trump at all costs.
Fair means or foul. That's right. Doesn't matter, because you are doing the right thing. And the American people are so stupid that and so morally inferior that they don't know what they're doing if they want to vote for someone like Donald Trump.
You know, another the American people, we can't think about allowing them to exercise their constitutional right to select who the government. We can't trust that. We can't trust those rubes out there with that, because, my God, look what they might do.
Well, exactly, and that comes back to your opening statements about this injunction on the free speech lawsuit. This is, again, about government and agencies and sort of our superiors saying that we can't be trusted with free speech because we are so stupid and so illogical and irrational that we will do terrible things if we are allowed to know the truth.
Take us in this. Miranda Devine, a New York Post columnist, brilliant columnist who helped break the story of the Hunter Biden laptop. So take us inside the organization, inside the newsroom at the New York Post, when your platform, when you got deplatformed by Facebook and Twitter. What happened next?
Well, I guess, I mean, in the run-up to the story, we steeled ourselves in the knowledge that this was a huge story, that this was going to rock a lot of boats. You know, 3 weeks before an election, a lot of people didn't want this story. A lot of very powerful people didn't want this story to come out. So, you know, I was prepared for being ignored by the rest of the media, for people to just say this is garbage, that the New York Post is just tabloid trash, etc. But we were comfortable with, you know, the merits of the story. So that was what was expected. What was not expected was this censorship from Facebook and Twitter, because at that point they hadn't really showed to the public their power and the fact they were willing to use it. They'd sort of sheathed to their claws. So that was really a shock. And, you know, there was, I mean, this was above my pay grade, but there were certainly communications going on and negotiations where Twitter was trying to get the New York Post to delete our tweets about this story in order to get our account restored. And to their great credit, my editors and the hires up refused to do that, and so suffered the consequences, the financial consequences, of not having an account, of being basically banned off social media for 2 weeks.
So, Miranda Devine, you know, going forward here, you know, the judge in Louisiana has issued this injunction that says until this case is adjudicated, you at the White House, you know, all you federal officials are all part of the administration. You can't call up Twitter. You can't call up Facebook. You can't move to censor content or get posts taken down. So you can't do that. Okay, fine. So the White House, you know, let's just say they abide by that and they say, okay, we won't do it. What is anything going to change at Facebook? They know what they like and what they don't like, and that hasn't changed. What will substantively change, even in the wake of the order?
I think the order's already had an impact, even though the Biden administration immediately put in an appeal, so it'll probably end up in the High Court. But already the State Department has cancelled its weekly meetings with those social media companies, with big tech. And so I think, you know, they won't be able to continue. It wasn't just that they would ring up Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube, et cetera. They were bullying them. I mean, the emails that are contained in that memo, I would just urge any American who cares about their freedoms, First Amendment being the first for a reason, to read that memo. It's very well written. It's full of incredible examples of the abuses by this administration and the different agencies. You know, really breaking the law. They're not allowed to censor American speech, but they were using these companies as their proxies and bullying them in the most egregious ways. I mean, I had always felt badly towards Twitter and Facebook because they're, you know, they're peopled by a bunch of leftists who are naturally inclined to be authoritarian and to cancel speech they don't like. But when you see what was going on, it really wasn't in their commercial interest to so blatantly be censoring accounts and censoring speech. But they were forced to because the administration, including Joe Biden, who had a coordinated statement to the press in which he said that these companies were killing people because he was suffering a political hit over vaccine hesitancy. Those companies, those Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, they were being threatened with their very livelihood with this Section 230 being repealed, which gives them immunity and is very important to their business. And so they sort of had no choice but to bow to this bullying. It was outright blackmail and bullying, so wrong.
Well, okay, so let's move forward. Now we are here. We are. It's 2023. By the way, the mainstream media, CBS, jumped on the story and they finally got on board. And 769 days later, confirmed what you guys already knew. So here's my question for you. You're there in New York. You're in the New York media. You move in those circles. What are they going to do with the ever-expanding story that flows from that laptop, the ever-expanding web of political payoffs and bribery and millions of dollars being transferred into LLCs and spread around and made hard to trace, and all of what we have learned as a result of you guys breaking this story? Will they be forced ever to fully engage on this story?
Look, there are some hopeful signs because I think that the evidence that's coming out, through, you know, now that the Republicans have control of Congress, that really was a game changer. And so, for instance, the evidence, the testimony of the IRS whistleblower Gary Shapley, very courageous man who brought the receipts. He had 11 exhibits that he presented with his testimony, FBI transcripts of interviews, the fact that the FBI had verified the laptop. They'd authenticated as Hunter Biden's back in October of 2019 before they'd even picked it up with a subpoena from the laptop repair shop. But by February of 2020, they had completely verified the laptop. They said that it was now reliable. They were comfortable that it was reliable to be used as evidence. So that was that, really. And, of course, we weren't told about that. And the FBI was there in October 2020 pre-bunking our story, even though they knew that our story was correct and everything on the laptop was authentic. I think that when it comes to the media, they have been slow on the uptake, but the evidence now is so overwhelming, and there's more coming. I mean, Hunter Biden's best friend in business, Devin Archer, is slated to testify before the Oversight Committee in the next 10 days or so. And also there are other whistleblowers that have come forward with, you know, equally amazing evidence as Gary Shapley. So this is just going to continue, and at some point, I think the rest of the media is going to have to just, you know, lay down the protection racket and do their jobs. And there are signs of that already. But, you know, at the same time, they're running the narrative from the White House and from the White House allies. And they've done a whole lot of sob stories about poor Hunter, you know, and about how Joe Biden is worried that his son, you know, with all the pressure and all the investigations and the questions about corruption, that that's going to force Hunter to relapse and go back into addiction. And also stories about what a great father Joe Biden is, mm-hmm. and how, he's inviting Hunter and his brother Jim Biden, who was involved in all this funny business, Hunter's uncle Jim, to that state dinner for the Indian Prime Minister, where Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, was also attending. He did that just because he's a great father, not caring about the optics of the Attorney General being there at this
Yeah, how weird is that? I mean,
days after the tweet deal.
It's crazy. And meanwhile, the deal's not done because the judge hasn't signed off on it. Miranda, we could go all day, but unfortunately, the end of the show is coming. I really always appreciate it when you take the time to join the show when I'm filling in, because I find what you have to say fascinating, and I really, really thank you.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Cole.
Miranda Devine from the New York Post. There she goes. Here we go. More of the show coming up after the break. Stay with us.
You're listening to the most relatable man on the radio.
Best way to describe him is to say he's the typical boy next door.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. Hey, let's do it again tomorrow. We're wrapping up the show today, but I will be back tomorrow. Jimmy will be back in the chair on Monday. Hey, listen, we've been talking about free speech for most of the program today. You not only have the right to criticize the government, you have the actual duty to criticize the government. The First Amendment is first for a reason. If the government is not doing what you want done, it is your absolute duty to speak out. It is your absolute duty to hold the government to account. You have the right to speak, and you're going to get the government that you deserve. And so the idea that they can somehow decide what is acceptable speech and what is not acceptable speech is completely antithetical to the founding of this great nation. So if Facebook and Twitter are going to, or the new one that Zuckerberg is launching, not going to let you speak freely, then stop using their platforms altogether. They have to have yours and other people's eyeballs in order to succeed. Deprive them of what they need. It is your country and your absolute right to speak out against the government and be critical of the government. That's what we fought for back in beginning in 1775 with the shot heard round the world at Lexington and Concord. This is your country, and it is your right to speak out against and speak up to the government. Hey, it's Paul Gleiser sending in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. We'll do it again tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. Thanks to Mike and Josh in the control room in New York for making it all possible, and thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.